All right, so this is called the afterburn. This is where you get to share your thoughts, ask questions, get some answers, hopefully, about today's teaching. And if you're here, you could just go ahead and line up, and we'll start taking questions with Ashley.
My first question, not owning something is evil, you said. What about when in counseling you told me that's not for me to own? Is owning something that's not for me, is that evil as well?
Absolutely, because then you're going to have suffering. I didn't mention that, but I'm glad. See, this is why I like the afterburns, because it brings up additional points that are sort of peripheral to the deal. If you own something that's not yours, anybody ever do that and not suffer? You always suffer. Don't you suffer when you own something that's not yours? So that would be evil. Because I have people all the time coming to me, my son, blah, blah, blah. I said, your son? How old's your son? 42. 42? Where, does he live at home? No. Then why do you own this? But the person's miserable because their child is doing some dumb thing or whatever. It's hurting himself. And so they're owning it and feeling terrible. Now, you can feel bad watching. I mean, Yahweh felt was grieving watching what we were doing as human beings here. But owning it as if it's like your responsibility, your thing, is going to cause you suffering too when it's not yours to own. Our problem is we tend to own stuff we shouldn't and don't own what we should. Own meaning take responsibility. Own the responsibility, okay? Take responsibility for your stuff and recognize that some things that are not yours, you need to let it be okay that it's theirs. It's not your problem. That doesn't mean you can't have empathy and sympathy. That's a whole quantum leap lower ownership than just saying, I'm owning it, okay? The emotional commitment level is so much less. I have a lot of empathy and sympathy. I know a lot of people think I don't, but I do. But the problem is you will try to get me to own something that I won't own, and then you get frustrated. And I try to get you to not own something that's not yours. And then you're so miserable. And I try, and I say, let it go. And you're like, how? At least that's what she says. How? You got to learn how to let go. Okay, Janet.
Thank you, Rabbi. I have 7 pages of notes.
Of notes, okay.
No questions, just notes.
Somebody set the timer. We're limiting Janet to 2 minutes.
Right. I just have a quick question. You can put the timer. The question is Genesis 6:6, when it says that Yahweh was grieving his heart. My question is, since we were made, created in his image, or according to his image in 1:27, so can you expand on what does that mean, Yahweh's heart, please?
Okay, say that one more time. So he's grieved in his heart. You're trying to say what it means when he's grieved in his heart?
Yes, yeah, according from Yahweh's heart, like compared to our heart.
Yeah. I mean, he looked down, and look, he's using words that he's hoping that will be relatable to us. So we would think that when we're sad, that it would be like having our heart. He could have said that his heart was broken, right? When we're sad, when especially like if you're a parent, your child can do something that breaks your heart, right? As a parent, you know, parents have said that probably about us, right? Oh, you did that stuff, you broke my heart. So that's kind of what's happening here. Man is behaving in such a way that Yahweh's saying, and your behavior broke my heart. It was very sad to me. So it's a description of the emotion that he was trying to help us understand how disappointing this was and sad this was for him. Now, he doesn't have the same emotions in the way we do. He says, Yahweh's not going to have those negative emotions. He says, I'm not a man to have these negative emotions that you think of. But he can describe himself sometimes in ways so you can understand it in a way that we can understand it, right? So I think that what he's trying to say here is like when he sees these things, he was sorry. Now, sorry doesn't actually work when he knew the end from the beginning. But he's trying to communicate to us how he, knowing all this would play out all the way to the end, how much that at that moment he was saddened and regretted that this had to be a part of the process, that it had to go this way. He wasn't like, sorry, like, I never saw this coming. And then all of a sudden he's like, man, if I had known they were going to go like this way, I would never have made him in the first place. See, that doesn't fit the rest of how we understand Yahweh, right? So we have to look at it as his way of communicating to us as he dictates these to be written down so that we can relate to how he must have felt at the time going on. So, you know, there are moments where I know parents have done this. They look at their child like, man, I wish I'd never given birth to you. You've been nothing but grief. But they don't really feel that way all the way through. But that moment, they're thinking, was it worth it? And I think Yahweh, you know, knowing how this is all going to play out, which is why he tells you after he brings them out of the flood and he says, look, this is still going to be the problem, but I'm not going to do another flood. Because he already knows the end from the beginning. He already knew from the beginning that Yeshua would come. He already knew that he would come and rule and reign and, you know, with the millennium. He knows the whole thing. But that doesn't mean it's not sad to have to actually watch it play out. Of course it's sad. And it hurts. And so that's what he wanted to say. Did that answer the question? All right, good. All right, did.
So, Rabbi, when you mentioned that the word for evil was da'arat,
wickedness is ra'at.
Wickedness is yeah. Zara'at?
No, ra'at.
Ra'at, oh, okay.
Ra'at. Zara'at is the stuff that ends up on your skin and on your clothing.
For some reason, Yahweh brought the connection into my head.
Sure, there is a connection.
He reminded me, it was usually in English, it's substituted for leprosy, but I think, taught by you that that's not really what it was. But it was a collective, maybe for all disease?
No, I mean, look, the Sarat was connected to covenant breaking.
Okay.
Okay? And it was manifested on their clothing. It was manifested on their skin. Could even be manifested on the walls of their house. Leprosy is a disease that has a skin component to it. It's, you know, that you see it that way. But it's a different word for that. So it's not exactly leprosy the way we would think of it today. All right?
Okay. So it still got on everything. It contaminated them.
Yes.
So,
which is what you're trying to connect to.
Yeah. By that way, I mean, I don't know. I don't know where I was. Maybe just parenting has got me crazy, but, I don't know. For some reason I connected it to cancer almost.
Well, and it spreads like a cancer.
Yeah. How humanity became sort of a cancer on the earth because, it brought evil to each other, Yahweh, the earth, the Torah. And so Yahweh had to use the flood as sort of like how medication wipes away cancer. And he had allowed allowed Noah and his family, the healthier cells, I don't know, in my mind, to proliferate and grow. And but the thing is, cancer can come back.
Yep.
So are we going to be cancerous cells or are we going to be healthy cells?
Great. I think it's a good analogy. Good analogy. And there is a connection to the Sarat that we see in Metzorah and Tazriah. So we see that in those Torah portions. When we deal with cancer and other diseases, what are we always taught to do to help our immune systems? To, you know, load up on antioxidants, right? And we do vitamin C and D3 and zinc and other things that are supposed to help and all that kind of stuff. Well, you know what? Let's take this into the spiritual side. So when you study, it's like taking an antioxidant for this evil stuff. When you pray, it's like taking an antioxidant for the evil stuff. When you get counsel, when you get yourself in line in the structure, when you keep Sabbath, it's like an antioxidant. When you eat right, it's an antioxidant. These are all things that help to build your spiritual immune system, let's call it. And so those are things that, by the way, if you take vitamin C to help your physical body today and never take it again, it's not really going to help you all that much. So just like if you pray today and don't pray again, or study today and don't study, these are things that you have to do daily, okay? Somebody once upon a time, I know they thought it was very clever, was talking about the Ten Commandments and said, take 2 tablets daily, you know? I don't like that phrase only because it's way too limiting to the 10, okay? But it's funny to say. But the thing is, I want you to understand that you're strengthening your spiritual immune system by keeping Shabbat. Every time you do, that strengthens your system. It's not going to last forever, so if you only keep it today and never keep it again, but it helps to build. Every time you make a choice when you eat, to eat appropriately. Every time you make a choice to keep a Torah command, when given a choice to not keep a Torah command. These are all things that strengthen your spiritual immune system, so to speak, which gives you the things that you need to combat the evil inclination, the Yetzirah. Okay? All right, Steve.
Okay. In 6:5, you talked about what evil was, but can't evil also be something that it's not used for what it was designed? Because weren't we designed to keep Torah, so men's desires have gone to the way, because we use things that they're not in the way they're not designed for?
Well, let's bring it back to our definition. So if you use something that's not designed to be used that way, it will generally cause suffering, injury, ruin, pain, harm, or destruction of some sort. Yes or no? Okay? So, and you can talk about even physical things. If we take physical things and we use them in ways that they were not designed, at some point, something will go wrong with that. Somebody could get hurt, somebody. And so you want to use things for what they're designed to do. And so that includes us. He designed us for certain things. And when we do things that we weren't designed to do in ways we weren't designed to do them, there will be suffering. Things will go bad. There will be damage, destruction, ruin, harm, pain, something. All right? A lot of you have known that you've done this where you've taken something to use as a screwdriver or a hammer that wasn't really designed to do, and it worked just fine a few times until it didn't work and something went bad. You got to be careful if you use things for things that are not designed to be used for. That can end up in a point where our definition of evil kicks in, because harm, ruin, pain, suffering, destruction, something like that. All right, now we're going to do a live stream.
Well, I've got a question, Rabbi. On referring in the Genesis 6, you was talking about our desires, and you know, and just you'd never be satisfied if you're constantly trying to reach an unattainable goal or whatever it was. And it says, how do we find satiety through the Torah, and then how do we find that balance in our desire to walk this out? Is that too much obsessing if we're trying to do this too much?
No, because the problem is you're only mentioning half the point. The other half of the point is that we should want it the way he wants it. So when it says we should want it with all our heart, mind, and body, he wants us to do that in a way that is balanced to all of the elements that means. So in other words, if I'm going to do like some of the Orthodox do and just study Torah all day to the exclusion of hanging out and spending time with my wife and my kids, and then that's not what he means. Because part of what he desires, if we're going to love him, is how we love each other. So the balance is part of that. So as long as we desire him with everything, that desiring him is also meaning that we're matching up, as I said, our desire with his. And that's what we just spent the whole time doing love in Torah, right? He wants us to love him a certain way. He also wants us, it's his desire that we love each other a certain way. And if we do one at the expense of the other, we're missing the point. And so our desire is for him. Well, let's rephrase this. Our desire is that our desire will line up with his. With all our heart, mind, and being, that ours would line up with his. So we would want the things he wants. Desire the things he desires in the way that he desires them. Yes, you can absolutely get out of balance. Okay, you can absolutely get out of balance. There are people out there that are, you know, at least they call themselves Torah teachers, that travel all over the place, and their families are completely neglected. They're never home. All they do is travel. And it's a hard thing to balance. I mean, you could talk to anybody that's ever been in the churches, in the leadership, and any of the pastors. There's a lot of problems where the pastors can be so. Actually, you know what? Let's take that to any job. Some of you have husbands that are career focused and they have like forgotten their families because they're obsessed with work. I remember I was at a resort working with a client at a resort, and the woman was saying how she was a little concerned and distracted. I said, what's the matter? She said, my husband is down by the pool with my daughter, and I'm hoping it's going okay. I said, why? Don't they? He's, you know, what's the problem? She goes, he's never home. They don't even know each other. So I'm not sure how that's going to go right now. He works all the time and travels all the time. So she was actually concerned how her daughter was going to be with her father, and they're not divorced or anything. He's just never met any effort in. You know, I never had much of a relationship with my father. I make an effort to have one with my children. I mean, it's not always the best because we're like, you know, typical parent and child. We have our moments. But I give them attention. I show them and give them time, right? I give my wife time. Because you guys all know how much I work. You might think that I don't make the time. I do. I give them time. And if they ever need it, I stop what I'm doing and I give them time because there has to be balance. And so what we're looking for in our loving him with everything is we want to then do what he defines as love. And that's why the whole teaching we just did for 50 whatever parts, right? 59 parts. So that hopefully answers the question.
From Anna Uden, is narcissism or being a narcissist an evil state of being?
And it's not that I'm trying to think of how to answer the question. I'm trying to decide what to do with the labeling. Okay? Let's let only professionals label. Okay? If you're not a psychologist going for diagnosis, then let's not label people. Recognize that there are certain behaviors that you're experiencing from the other person, and if they're causing themselves or you harm, pain, suffering, whatever, then there's something evil happening. Not evil like Satan evil. This is we're defining this differently now, right? Okay? An undesired effect. So if people are miserable, then evil must be happening or you couldn't be miserable. You're experiencing some level of evil if you're suffering and there's ruin and pain and misery and all that other stuff. That's the descriptive words for evil, an experience that has evil in it. But I want us to be really reluctant to using, you know, I know for some reason the idea of narcissist became like the big deal in the last few years, and everybody's a narcissist now. Everybody that's mad at anybody wants to say, well, you know, my husband is a narcissist. Oh, my wife's a narcissist. I mean, I've already been called that by everybody. Okay? And I don't even think they know what the word means, you know? Because I went and looked it up. I went and got some YouTube videos from psychologists explaining what a narcissist is. And I didn't, that's my opinion, I just didn't think the person who called me that understood what it actually is. That doesn't mean I don't have some problems that could be irritating and make you feel suffering and evil, etc. But to label is very, let's be careful labeling. Let's not label somebody as evil. Just understand that if you're suffering, you're experiencing it. Remember that someone who could be causing it could be thinking they're doing good and intend good, but you suffered anyway. We have to be careful labeling. Unless I tell you you're being red, white, or blue, or yellow, then that's fine. No, I'm kidding. Let professionals do the labeling if it's necessary. It's more like diagnosing, okay? But don't do it from the point of view using it as, well, you know, that person's a narcissist. What if you're wrong? Maybe they just have other issues and it's not that. And now you're kind of, you know, causing some sort of stigma problem, this and that and whatever. Does that make sense? So let's just be really careful with the labeling. All right. Yeah, you can clap for that. Now, if you're experiencing, because the lady who asked the question, if you're experiencing some adverse things, then you can certainly counsel, and we could talk about how to address those adverse things. They don't require a label. Now, I'll tell you where labels are helpful. Labels are helpful if you are wanting to help somebody. In other words, if you have a child that's having problems and they can go get diagnosed, now you can understand them from a loving, helping point of view. Not an attacking, well, he's just, you're just a narcissist. As opposed to saying, wow, that person's a narcissist. I should figure out how to adjust to that so that I can help them and understand what's happening and not suffer as much, instead of pointing a finger and going, you awful narcissist, you, or whatever it is, right? So this way, it's useful. And if you think you might have some issue or someone calls you a label, go look it up because maybe you do. And if you do, maybe you can figure out how to fix it. Don't be afraid to find out that you are whatever people call you. You might be. Okay? And how else are you going to address it if you don't know? Okay, I have a pain in my tooth. Could be a cavity. Could be an abscess. Could be needing a root canal. How am I going to find out if I don't get it labeled by someone who's professional? So I go to a dentist. I say, I've got this pain in my tooth. What is it? Because without knowing, I'll address a cavity different than if it's an abscess, different than if it's needing a root canal, different than if they got to pull the tooth and put something else in there. You know what I'm saying? It's different once it's diagnosed. So if you know that you have issues with some people on a consistent enough basis, then you probably should go figure out why. And go see somebody who can test you. I mean, you know what? I'd love to just have a place that you could all go and just go through the battery of tests and find out where you are on the autism scale, where you are on the opposition defiance scale, where you are on the ADHD scale, where you are on the anger scale, all these things so you'd know what you're dealing with. I'm serious. But are you going to be open to receive when you find out? I don't know. And by the way, I'd line up and take all the tests first. I'd be very happy to take every, I'd like to know. I never claim not to be all screwed up. I've admitted that publicly many times. Okay? I have no reluctance. And I'm trying to self-diagnose as best I can, and I study a lot of things to try to help. And some help a little bit, some don't help as much. But, you know, certainly wouldn't hurt to go out there and figure this stuff out. All right, Rob.
Okay, from Taylor Olivia. Says, apology, Rabbi, if I missed it, but what's the connection between being made in his image and likeness and being evil as humans again? Says, we have desires, but not naturally have his heart. Is this right?
Okay, so everything you said was probably right on. I'm just going to repackage it to explain it, I guess, in a little detail. We are made in his likeness, which means that everything that he is, we can be and are to some degree. That doesn't mean everything that we do and have is his. He has emotions, so do we. But ours have a different spectrum than his does, and ours are not necessarily in control like his are, although sometimes we have control like he does. So it's a likeness, it's not a clone. Our Father is a creator. We create. We bring children into the world. We invent and create all kinds of wonderful things that are out there that we utilize and look at every day. I mean, I'm able to talk to all you people on the live stream because somebody created the internet and the technology to do all of this. And so we are like him in those aspects. We can do things in like kind as he does. There are verses that say he was angry. We get angry too. Our anger isn't necessarily handled the way he does. He handles it perfectly. We don't. But we can because we're made in his image, so we have the ability. Does that hopefully clarify that a little bit? So just because we're in his likeness and we have our thoughts are in evil continuously, so that, does that mean his? No. Because we have the choice, we can choose. And that's what Adam pretty much set in motion, was eating from that tree. Yahweh uses evil on a regular enough basis, but he uses it the right way. He knows when to use it, when not to use it, how much to use, how much to send on people and when, or nations. We do not. We can. We struggle with it. The more you let the mind of Yeshua be in you, the more you'll be able to do it too. So you can do what he does. We struggle because we're not him yet. Hopefully that answers the question. Rob?
Okay, from Sunflower says, if y'all already knows the beginning and the end, wouldn't he have known how evil man was, and then why would he create us anyway to become that?
Okay, I really already answered this question, but I'll try again. I'll be Yahweh for a second. I'm already accused of thinking I'm that anyway on the internet, so. I'll be Yahweh for a second. So here I have a plan. I want to have ultimately this kingdom at the end of all this. So my plan is to ultimately have a whole lot of people to live with forever in a community that's loving according to what I, Yahweh, think is loving. And to get there, and from the beginning, I have to create people. And those people are going to mess this up to some degree. And out of those people, there will be one. And from that one, rather than that one be so diluted and polluted throughout everything, because there's only the one left, that Noah, I'm going to wipe them out, restart with him, and then the thing goes fine forward from there. Not fine, meaning like perfect, but works its way where enough people end up joining into the right mindset and becoming the right way, so that by the time we get to Yeshua, everything's where it needs to be. By the time we get to the return of Yeshua, everything's where it needs to be. So it's still the end from the beginning. But he also knew if he let it just go, I'm guessing because he made a choice that showed that he chose not to do this, so he must have chosen not because it doesn't work. He could have left it the way it was and gone all the way till now. But he knew the end from the beginning and knew that wouldn't work. So then he decided, I'll wipe them out, work with the one, and if I work with the one, that works. Not works like everything's smooth, but works meaning it will get me to where I ultimately want to end up. Does that now make more sense? Okay? So it's not like he made a mistake and started over. He said, I got what I needed out of the first batch. I needed Noah. Okay? I got what I needed out of the first batch. But since it was not just like Noah and 8, 12, 15, 100 other guys that were like that, it was just one. Who knows what happens just to one if he just leaves it that way? They just snuff him out and it just dies right there? But with Noah starting it and then training Shem and then others to go, there was always going to be now a nice little percentage that was going to make this work out. Oh, well, why couldn't he have done that with Adam? I don't know. This is his plan, not mine. Okay? Because I'm not him. But from looking at it, this is what it appears to look like. It appears to look like he had already concluded, had he left it the way it was, it wouldn't get what he wanted at the end. Now remember, he's allowing free will in all of this. So he only intervenes in different places where necessary to ultimately eventually get his result that he wants without changing free will. And so the initial batch of human beings with free will ended up like chapter 6. And so that's when he wiped them out. By the way, notice he never gave anybody a chance to have any input. This isn't like when he wiped out Sodom and Gomorrah, where he wanted to get Abram's opinion on things. Not that he was going to do anything Abram said. He was just trying to test Abram to see how he felt about people, his compassion, all these other things. He just tells Noah, I'm wiping everybody out. This isn't like when he said to Moses, hey, Moses, what do you think? Why don't I just wipe everybody out and start again with you? No, this is, I'm just wiping them out. Go build an ark. And so the conclusion that I would guess is that it doesn't work the other way. So he chose not to go that way because it's a dead end. So remember, the whole point of everything in the last 6,000 years was to get us where we're going and nothing else. Everything that's happened since creation has happened to get us to the point we're headed towards. With the right number of people, with what he wants and what he's looking for, whatever his vision had been. And he's given us some insight as to what that is. And I've shared that, you know, for 10 years now with you guys. Okay? 20, really. Ask Uncle Bob. He goes back 20 with me. All right? And the message has been the same. And that's, I think, the key. We have to read more to the story that's right there. Did he just make a mistake and just decide, well, I guess Noah's the only good one? I think that he knew this is part of the plan. That's why he told Noah, they're going to mess this up. He told Moses before they left, before they actually crossed the Jordan into land, he told them they're going to mess it up. He told them they're going to get scattered among the nations. He told them he's going to regather them. All right. Anything else, Rob?
Okay, from I Walk Alone, is it evil to love my neighbor but not like them at the same time?
Something that causes or the source of suffering, injury, ruin, pain, harm, or destruction. If it doesn't do that, it's not evil. So, not liking somebody, because people do things that are not likable. That's not a problem, as long as you don't start treating them in ways that cause suffering, pain, injury, harm, etc. There's people I say, look, I love you, but I certainly don't like you at the moment. Because what you're doing is maybe causing me evil. I'm suffering from some harm of some sort or injury. Child does something, whatever it is, that you're all mad about. You have to communicate to the child. Look, I don't like you at the moment, but I love you. I will always love you. But I'm not like, well, do you still love me? Yes, I still love you. I'm not liking you right now. It's different. Love is a universal concept that you do unconditionally if we're doing the right type of love, the agape love. Liking is basically situational. I mean, it's conditional. You like something or you don't like it. So when you do stuff I don't like you very much at the moment. That doesn't mean I don't still love you and I'm not going to like you tomorrow, but right now I'm not liking you very much. I'm mad. You hurt my feelings. You broke my thing. You did this. Whatever it is, right? We're all mad about whatever it is. You didn't show up. You hung up on me. I don't know, whatever. So no, it doesn't necessarily mean that it's evil. If you start treating them in a way that you shouldn't treat them, that would cause harm, injury, suffering, pain, or something else, then it would be evil. Okay? I appreciate that everybody's struggling a little bit because this is a different way of seeing this, you know?
Angela Ryan says, are we to call out evil so that we do not allow it to influence us, our children, or our home?
I'm not really sure what that looks like, although it has me immediately, my first gut reaction is to be concerned about the idea of calling out evil. So I would say no. I would say what you want to do is be aware of stuff that causes evil, in other words, suffering, pain, injury, etc., and do what you need to mitigate that. Okay, to avoid it, to handle it, to fix it, or whatever has to be done, or to protect the family from it actually, you know, coming over and affecting the family in some way. But I would not be doing it from the idea of calling it out, which is what you guys love to do all over Facebook, think it's your job to be the cry aloud, spare not prophets. You guys all think you're like cry aloud, spare not prophets. That's what you are. But you're not. So, you know, you need to just knock it off. All you're doing is causing harm where it does need to be. And actually, most of your posts, because they are offensive to other people, are actually evil. Think about it. When you mock all the people doing Christmas this time of year or whatever, you're going to hurt their feelings. You're going to offend them and insult them. Oh, but Christmas offends Yahweh. Well, that's his problem, not yours. Why is it your problem? He'll handle that. See, that's you owning something that's not yours. Is it your fault that people are keeping Christmas or his? He allowed it, not you. And if he wants to stop it, he will. When he wants to, he will. All he has to do is what he did to you. Open your eyes and you'll be like, oh my gosh, this is pagan. That's fine. But that takes him, not you. People all the time think I like hate Christians. And I say, why? It's not their fault. They're where they are because he's allowed that. That's his problem, not mine. What's my problem? To do what I'm doing here. Get this word that he's given me to give out where people can find it. Not to get it in their face, but just put it where they can find it. And if he wants them to find it, he'll draw them to it. Okay? That's different than calling out. Okay? You guys all want to call people out. You know, I could sit up here, I could call out ministries, I could call out individuals. What would be the point, though? What would be the point? Is that going to bear any good fruit? And I've done it in the past when I felt it was necessary as a warning, as a watchman. But that's my job as a watchman. You're not all watchmen. What do you think? Everybody in Jerusalem was on the wall? They had certain people. Their job was to be on the wall as watchmen. You guys all think you're on the wall watching. Not your job. So let's not be calling people out. You can make your family aware that something may be dangerous and harmful and cause, and it may be evil, so to speak, and help them avoid it. That's not calling it out, though. That's pointing out, sharing information with those that you care about. Hey, don't touch that stove. It's hot. You might burn yourself. Which, by the way, would make the stove evil, right? Because you would have burned yourself, which would mean that it caused harm and suffering. Spouse comes in and says, you need to get rid of that evil stove. It burned me. All right. Anything else, Rob?
Yeah, we have a lot, but just you let me know when you want to go.
Well, okay. Do I have only these two over here? Is anybody else? I got three? All right, let me try and get these three real quick, Rob, and I'll come back to you. Okay. Round two.
Last round for me.
Everybody coming up is on round two, so go ahead.
I love you, Father Rabbi. Question for you. Obviously, in this teaching today, I realized I have a big problem of receiving information, and I don't know how you're still alive and not shooting yourself sometimes in our counseling sessions, but what do we need to do to become prepared for counseling sessions, as in how can I get myself to receive better?
Okay, come without preconceived desires of what the outcome should be, okay? Just come ready to receive. I know that sounds simple, but it also sounds hard. But a lot of you will come to counseling, and when you come into the counseling, you already have what you're hoping or expecting to happen. And when it doesn't, we have a problem.
So that's my issue? I didn't think I came to...
No, it could be part of it. But the other part is that when you do hear it, that you have a willingness then to receive so that you do it. So with you, a lot of the times the problem is, and this isn't going to be sharing anything, but with you, a lot of the times the problem is that when I tell you something to do, you instead of accepting that it's something you can figure out, you say, how? Because on the surface, your initial gut thought is, I don't know how to do that. Okay? So when often it has to do with letting something go. And you'll be like, well, how do I do that? And then we'll talk about it some more. But most of you struggle because you can't receive that it's something that you can do, and it's as simple as simply releasing something. Because it's so real to you, this thing you've had for so long, that having it no longer be a part of you is like almost inconceivable. And that's where it's a problem. Because I like that you asked the question, and I just got an interesting idea. When you come for counseling, okay, you have to take into the idea that you may need to let go of something that's a part of you, that's always been a part of you, in order to move forward. And that's hard to do. If something has been a pain and a suffering and a misery or some other way of seeing the world your whole life, and now you have to let that go, that's like letting you go. How do you do that? Your whole life, everybody's told you what a loser you are, and now you need to receive that you're not. And it's like, well, how do I do that? I've always been told I was a loser. I was always told I was this. I was always told I was that. So how do I let that thought go and put a new one in? Well, it's not easy. And I can give you techniques and things to do to kind of keep putting the new idea into your system, to reprogram yourself, so to speak, you know. But prepared means before you come in, say, Abba, pray. Abba, help me when I go in here to be open to receive the counsel that's given.
Rabbi, when you were talking about renewing our minds, when you were saying taking thoughts into captivity is what you were talking about. And then you were comparing the rational mind versus the emotional mind, how the emotional mind is really fast and the rational mind, and we need to slow down. So what would you recommend to do to take thoughts into captivity? Would you say observe them and write them down, or is there any specific ideas that you could give us from your life coaching experience? Thank you.
Okay. So my first quick thought. No. So my first thought on that is, what if you were to change your default to when you see something, observe something, experience something, the first response should be, that's interesting. Instead of, that's awful, or that's, you know, just like, that's interesting, because it's caught your interest. So it's accurate. And then you can ask the next question is, and I wonder what I should do with that. Okay? That's interesting. People over here are yelling and screaming, or something over there is happening, and you go, that's interesting. I wonder if this involves me. Maybe it shouldn't involve me. But if you can at least get that pause of just saying, let's label it as interesting and not as something that right away you want to respond to. Instead of responding to, we just acknowledge, that's interesting. It caught your interest. How many times you've been in traffic because people didn't want to accept the idea that the problem that was on the road wasn't really their problem? It's just interesting. It's caught your interest. There's an accident. You wonder if everybody's okay. You wonder if there's a problem, whatever. But you're just driving along and it catches your interest. And there should be a thought, I need to focus on the road and keep things moving so I'm not slowing everybody else down behind me, because I'm already annoyed with the people in front of me that were doing that. And then, of course, as aggravated as you are, you slow down and rubberneck anyway. And you're sitting there turning your head watching the accident, right? And you were already mad at the people who were already doing that in front of you for the last 20 minutes that you were in the traffic. Something's happening. You're aware of it. It's interesting. Does that help, maybe? It's interesting. I wonder if it involves me. What if it should involve me? And if it does, then I can say, I wonder how I should react to this. Something happens in the house, your wife or your husband does whatever, or your kids do whatever, and you go, that's interesting. Somebody comes screaming through the hallways with something on fire, that's interesting. I wonder if I should do something with that. I wonder if it involves me. By the way, this could be very helpful if you become aware of something, ladies especially, all right? Ladies, pay attention to this, please. Because there are times when this goes sideways. It could go the other way, too, but this is really problematic. If you're becoming aware of something that your husband is already handling, then you should be saying, this is interesting. Let me see how he handles it. I don't need to jump in there. Instead of jumping in because you're saying, well, he's not handling it right, not the way I want, or he's not, or you want to get your 2 cents in because you want to scold that kid too, because whatever they did, you want to get your 2 cents. No. It's interesting. So watch. It doesn't involve you. Let them handle, but they're going to handle it wrong. You could talk about that later. It's their job to handle it if they're handling it, so let them handle it. And just look back and say, it's interesting, and watch. I'm curious how this is going to play out. Let's see. I mean, as long as it's not something that needs intervention because it's getting, you know, violent or something. I'm saying, but if something's being handled, let it be handled. All right, Steve. Did that help everybody a little bit? All right. Okay. You guys just clapped like the wave. It kind of started a little bit and it kind of got louder and it's I'm not sure if I want to clap. Okay, I guess I will, you know. All right, Steve, go ahead.
All right. You talked about what we need to prepare him. Wouldn't it be a big part of that, I believe, would be realizing and we have no say or opinion in what's going to happen or being sought, yet we're still valued because he's including us. I think a lot of us, in many cases, have a need to be have an input in order to feel included or even valued.
Yes, it's absolutely a problem. Actually, you know what? That's interesting. I think you really need to appreciate what he said, though. A lot of you will jump in because it's part of your receiving value. And you need to not jump in where you don't need to jump in. And stop worrying about people messing things up. Most of the things that you get involved in that you're afraid they're going to mess up, even if they mess it up, it's not that big a deal. It's something that can be fixed or whatever adjusted to, but let them finish what they're doing. Because you may, if you're patient, see that they eventually get where you want them to go anyway. But you jump in too quick. Let it play out. Or maybe you should go over to your spouse and say, I noticed you were just talking to our daughter or our son or whatever, and blah, 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 and I just want to understand because I didn't, it's not the way I would have handled it. I just want to understand. And then the person may say, look, just be patient. I do have a plan. This is going to get us where it is. Let this play out the way I'm doing it. And then you're like, yeah, but that's not what, no. Let this play out the way, give them a chance. All right? Same thing the other way. Husbands, if you see the wives handling something and they really want to handle it and it seems like, let it play out. But you can ask them, look, where are you trying to get this to go? Now, as long as you agree on the outcome at the end that you're both trying to get it to, and they think they can get it there, let them try. Okay? If there's no real reason to intervene and do it differently, let them try. How else are they going to learn anyway? But you need to be supporting and encouraging each other. Let them try. All right. That's interesting. Okay. Rob, we got time for a couple more with you.
Okay. From Bonnie, Leanne. Says, if we do evil to others with the intent of doing good, is evil a matter of perception rather than a concrete act?
Yes. And that's the way I defined it. Yes. And look, some of this stuff will be much more clear when we look at actual scriptural examples of all of these things, right? I threw a bunch of stuff at you up front. I talked about doing evil, speaking evil, evil eyes, nations doing evil, men doing evil to each other, people. I talked about all these things, Yahweh doing evil. We're going to look at verses that cover all of these things, and that'll be easier. Things also where the intent was good and it turned out evil and vice versa. We'll see these things play out, okay? And we'll have verses for it. We're starting with evil as a state of being because the very first thing that Yahweh talks about with evil in Scripture is men's hearts becoming evil as a state of being. And so I thought we'd deal with that one first. Actually, I would have preferred to have dealt with it last to show that all these things that you can do or receive that are evil, even worse, it can become a state of being. But I took it in his order because I was very much struggling with I thought, this is interesting. And anyway, I was very much struggling with which way to go, because I wanted to go with doing evil, this evil between men and men, evil, and cover it in a different direction and finish with it as a state of being. But then I saw chronologically, he did it this other way, so let's go with his way. All right? So yes, but to Leanne's question, we will be going into showing verses where people do evil, people receive evil, they speak evil, they have evil eye, they, you know, Yahweh brings evil. All these different things, okay? We're going to cover all of it. We may not spend a whole lot of time in certain ones. We'll just give a couple of quick examples and say, see, there you see how it is. And, you know, straightforward. And other things we may have to explain more deeply, like this part about state of being. But we will cover all those things. So I appreciate your question, Leanne. And your comment was right on, but we will show it actually from the verses. Okay, next.
From Betty Cardin. Genesis 6:6, is grieving of his heart similar to the grieving of his spirit?
Yes. They're both ways of trying to say, I grieved in my being. Okay? I think we have a problem with the word spirit. Sometimes we want to turn it into all kinds of things. It's his way of using idiomatic phrases to say, my whole, it just wasn't like a moment I was grieved. It grieved me to my core. I was deeply, it's an extreme way of saying I was very deeply upset or deeply sad. You know, we use phrases like to the, you know, down to the marrow or to the bone to mean how deep, right? It's not just surface deep or skin deep. We talk about things as a metaphor for something being light or heavy, like the heaviness down to the bone, right? So he said he grieved his heart, he grieved his spirit. He's trying to tell you, look, it grieved my nature. I mean, it really grieved me inside. It wasn't like, hey, you did something that disappointed me. It's not a big deal. This grieved him, okay? All right, next.
Okay, from I Walk Alone, could it be that Yah was sorry he made man because he knew it would lead to the death of Yeshua?
No. I don't think that connection's there. I mean, I'm sure that he wasn't pleased that that's the way this would play out, but he knew before it started that's the way it would play out. I mean, that wasn't like he was grieved because now you're saying that he expected man to be good and that Yeshua would never have had to die. No, Yeshua was always going to have to die. That was before the beginning of everything. They came to that agreement because he was slain before the foundation of the world. So there wasn't any world or humans or anything. So I would say, no, that I'm not saying that that didn't grieve him. I'm saying that the grieving going on here isn't connected to that necessarily, in my opinion, anyway. Okay? Because if it really grieved him that much, he wouldn't have made the next batch, or wouldn't have let Noah. He just would have killed them all, and it would have been the end of it. And he certainly could have done that, right? Could have wiped them all out. And yet he allowed one, and from that one, we get all the rest of these people again. Knowing full well, he said that their inclination is still going to be on evil. And yet, Yeshua was still going to have to die. And he did all that knowing it. Next.
From Yanni, says, if one leaves family and children to walk the Torah, isn't that evil to the family? If yes, what do I do not to be evil?
All right, look. This is why I love this topic in a lot of ways. It's so simple, but it's so complex. It's not simple. You want to make every effort to not do evil. What does that mean? So you're not going to cause suffering, pain, etc. That doesn't mean things that you do, even though you do it the best you can, still won't cause that. There's still going to be the one receiving thinking of it as evil. Look, you take a husband and a wife, and they definitely need to be divorced. I'm just picking a situation where there's no doubt that it's best for both of them to get divorced. That is an unhealthy thing. And the children will still, no matter what, see this as evil. They won't be able to see that mom and dad will destroy themselves if they don't get a divorce. Not that they're necessarily physically killing, they're just emotionally and health-wise, because they're so not able to have an agreement relationship, that the healthiest thing for everybody, including the children, would be the divorce. And not that divorce is a good thing. It's a lesser of two evils. You're suffering as a lesser of two evils is a perfect phrase for that. I just said it like, it just automatically came out of my mouth. I realized it's actually the right phrase, right? There's a lesser of two evils. Not that divorce is evil, meaning it's wrong to do. Divorce is going to cause pain and suffering, but staying married is causing pain and suffering. So you got to pick the lesser of the evil situations. And the children should know that they were suffering while they were still married too. But in their minds, they keep thinking, but someday it'll fix and then everything will be great. We don't need to have this all go this way. I mean, it's a terrible choice, but sometimes it's better than the other choice. Because you're really not helping the children very much if you're fighting all the time and it's all just suffering, all, you know, at home all the time. Living in that is just not healthy either, or good or desirable. So let's just understand that. I appreciate, you know, Yenny's question that she doesn't want to be doing evil. So we make every effort not to cause harm or suffering or pain. But sometimes, for example, like if you are not going to go to somebody in your family's wedding because it's on Shabbat, you don't want to hurt anybody, but you want to keep Shabbat. They're going to think your choice is evil. You're causing suffering. Don't you know how much pain you're causing in the family? And grandma can't stop crying because you won't, and all that, whatever, okay? All these people are all upset. They're going to call your decision evil. It wasn't evil. It resulted in evil. There was suffering. There was pain. It was miserable. Though, of course, those people chose to respond to what you did that way. So you didn't actually cause it. I mean, it's one thing for me to do something, you choose to respond emotionally to it in a certain way, and you suffer, which was your choice. It's another thing for Yahweh to bring Babylon down on Judah. Okay? With the sword. Where Judah had no choice how to respond to that. They were going to suffer. You just need to make your best effort to do everything you can, knowing that some of the things you can may cause suffering. Unintended suffering, maybe, but it may cause suffering, and there's nothing you can do about that. You do what you can, right? You only can do what you can, not what you can't. And you can't control people's response. You cannot control their response. Well, you made me angry. No, I did something and you chose to get angry. It didn't make you angry. But that's hard for us to embrace that. Can we all agree that's where we're... Well, everything you do irritates me. No, I do things and you choose to be irritated. Now, we should observe, learn, and adjust so that if you find the things you do does get an irritated response to the other person, you can avoid those things. If you can, why don't we avoid them? Until each of us grows up to the point where things don't irritate us, but yet we still have the ability to be irritated a lot of the time. Okay? Rob?
From... I pronounce this name, Okwi Butala says, I think they're referring to the 613, the 365, or the do not do's / against the law. Are these, would these be considered evil or wicked?
No, I mean, look, the do not do's, he says to not do them because if you do them, it would cause harm. So doing them would be evil. Like eating unclean things will hurt you. Not keeping Shabbat will hurt you, but that's a do that you wouldn't do. But when it says do not do, these are things that will hurt you. They'll hurt your relationships, they'll hurt whatever. He says, do not worship me as they worship their gods. So if you worship him like they worship their gods, that's evil. So the do not do's in themselves are trying to tell you if you do them, it's evil. Now the do's, he says, if you don't do them, it's evil. Remember the Sabbath day. So if you don't remember the Sabbath day, it's evil. You will suffer if you don't remember the Sabbath day. You need the Sabbath day. All right. Well, let's go ahead and wrap it up with that.